Disclaimer, if you are a parent and you generally listen to the Wednesday conversation with kids in the room, we are going to talk in this podcast about some things that relate to human sexuality and that are somewhat sensitive. And so this might be more of an earbud podcast than a in the minivan or in the living room kind of a podcast. So just want to give you a heads up on that.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about contraception part two.
Part two of like nine or however many this is going to be.
We're keep rolling this thing.
Contraception is actually probably the wrong title, but because for this podcast, we actually want to talk about reproductive technology, which is connected to contraception. So here's what's interesting is as we've been sitting around the table, even just brainstorming this whole category of things, there are two poles we keep coming back to. Number one, there are many married couples who are asking questions about contraception. How in our sexual relationship can we practice contraception in a biblically principled way? There's also questions of infertility and therefore reproductive technology. If we struggle, if we want to have kids and we're feeling like we're struggling, what technologies are okay for us to pursue? Can we pursue, fertility treatments? Can we pursue IVF, those kinds of things? So that's the conversation we want to have this week or start this week. We started the conversation last week about just contraception. What does the Bible say? What are biblical principles for thinking about fertility? We want to start the conversation this week about what are some biblical categories for thinking about the whole category of reproductive technology. And Chris, you had some insights as we were talking off the mic about the ways that really we need to see infertility as a type of suffering and how sometimes technology can become a false savior that seeks to deliver us from that suffering. And so there's an interesting sort of line that I think we need to walk here of technology is not bad, but it needs to be appropriated carefully for Christians. And so I wonder if you can sort of just take us into that insight you had about suffering and our desire to see it alleviated and how sometimes technology becomes the means by which we're seeking to alleviate that.
Yeah. You know, with the caveat, like you pointed, that there's much in common grace that we see in medicine and technology that, you know, praise God, we can alleviate certain types of suffering, and these things are good and thoughtful. To kind of quote the line from Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, just because we can doesn't mean we should. And so here's my burden with this, because, I say this, not having really gone down deep with anybody yet pastorally, but just thinking and reflecting on what is the temptation in our souls that when something hits that is suffering, or there is a deep desire we have, so desire to have kids, that there seems to be this means by which we can achieve that we're tempted to chase after that in a way that's not reflective and thoughtful. And really, essentially, it's like, I don't want to suffer in this way, and here are all these means, and it seems like it's okay. And so there's this deep temptation in our soul that can cause us to bypass reflection, because we probably know deep down in our soul that if I go down that rabbit hole and start to think about this and really wrestle this out, it may mean that I have to say no to some of these things that could give me what I want, and I'm going to have to choose suffering over alleviating that. And that's a hard place to be. And so I can empathize and I can understand why we would not want to reflect on this, or we would that temptation could be a powerful draw. But there comes back to this piece of, is the Lord still good? Can I trust the Lord? Can I take this to the Lord? Can I actually experience grace in the midst of this suffering? And what if it is that is what the Lord is calling me to? He's calling me to look at potentially alleviating the suffering in a way that is not biblical, and having to say, no, I choose obedience. I choose to trust the Lord, and I choose to follow him. He's still good, even in the midst of that. So that really becomes a big burden I have for that. And so, you know, you're listening to this podcast and maybe last week we said some things that kind of stirred some thoughts in your soul, and you've started to wrestle with this out, and you're starting to see maybe, wow, the way I've thought about this is maybe not necessarily right, and you're starting to feel that, oh crap. Can I say crap on the podcast?
Yes.
That this might mean I have to suffer. That, you know, that's going to be a temptation, and we acknowledge that.
Dusty, you walk with a lot of couples in our church through these matters, especially infertility and the questions surrounding what can I and should I do, what's okay to do. What are some of your insights as you sort of pastorally walk with people through that? If I could say it this way, since you're not sitting across the table from a person like that right now, and so this is coming into their earbuds, if you could just say, hey, here's two or three things I always want people to have on their radar as they think about those questions, what are they?
Yeah, I would say, and just to piggyback off Chris, I think the way I'd answer that is, I think for married couples, this is oftentimes the very first kind of suffering that they were not anticipating. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if my dad dies or my mom dies, that's okay because that's natural to life. Mm. But when we are engaged and we are going through premarital counseling, perhaps, and the questions were always, how many children do you want to have? And do you want to have children? And then, like, do you agree on a big family, small family? Those are the conversations that couples are having. They're not having the conversations usually of, because we don't desire suffering, right? So we don't talk about, well, what if the Lord doesn't give us children? That's usually not, that's kind of a somber conversation, right? So you don't have that on purpose. So sometimes I think this is the first time as married couples where you could be facing that in suffering, and how you suffer through this kind of sets the foundation for how you will suffer for 50 years, right? Perhaps. The other thing I would say is, man, you got to go slow. I would not push through the grief too fast. Mm-hmm. And we live in a culture that doesn't like to be sad, doesn't like to be sorrowful. At funerals, people joke and are happy because they don't like death. We do the same thing with all sorts of grief. So if this is a struggle for you, then, and we're not far from this struggle. So if it isn't even for you, then you know friends that are going through this, family members going through this.
Somebody in your gospel community.
Yeah, people in your gospel community are going through this. There's people within arm's reach of you that are going through these things, right? I would just say go slow. Enter into the grief. Don't push past those things to get to the technology to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And to solve the problem means, well, we want kids, so we're going to figure it out. And pastorally, I've seen some couples do this really well and reflectively, like we were talking about on the last podcast. And then I've seen other couples just really rush and they're just pushing through, partly because the grief is hard, but also because they just want what they want. And so they're going to get it, or they're going to try to get it. And really what's hard there, I think that they could possibly just be inviting more grief and now physical turmoil, perhaps, and financial turmoil. And so, like, what are the limitations here? Like, what is wise? Not in the sense of even just moral and good, but like, how much money should I be spending on this? Right? I mean, there's all sorts of conversations here.
Yeah. So a category or a starting point for a biblical and natural law way of thinking about reproductive technology is just to ask this. Am I working with my body or am I working against my body? Okay, so I think there are certain kinds of reproductive technologies that are just a doctor's coming alongside a couple and saying, how can I help your bodies work in the way that they're supposed to, but for some reason there's brokenness or they're not functioning the way they're supposed to. Okay, so I think there are certain kinds of reproductive technologies that would fall in that category. I think there are other kinds of reproductive technology that are fundamentally artificial. Meaning your body doesn't have to be involved, right? It's sort of like, let's take things from your body and take them into the laboratory and do things with them. And that begins to, I think, border on things that for Christians should be highly morally problematic and should lead to great pause. And I'm speaking specifically here of IVF, in vitro fertilization. The reason that's a very tense category is because there are always multiple embryos that a doctor is going to seek to create in that technology. And what that means is if you pursue that as a couple that's using that as a method of having a child, you're morally responsible for the embryos that are created. And Christian couples I know personally who have pursued that, that just weighs on them. Like I have friends who have two children via IVF and still have frozen embryos that they're responsible for that bear their DNA, that they're biologically their children. And they're just heartbroken over the question of what do I do now? Like, what's my responsibility with these embryos? Now, of course, there's embryo adoption and there are various sort of ways of resolving that. But it's an interesting question to ask. Did God ever intend us to be creating life outside the womb in ways that then now I'm responsible for a human life that's cryogenically frozen somewhere? Man, there are really, really deep moral and ethical questions there. And so I just think, again, rather than being prescriptive and saying, you know, do this or don't do that, I just want to raise these issues and say, man, my longing for couples who are trying to walk in sort of Christian integrity here is to say, back to your point, Chris, are there things that we're willing to say, hey, this is just off limits. I'm not willing to do this, not because it might not be the answer. It might give me what I want, but I'm not going to do it because I find it morally objectionable, you know, and those kinds of calls are so hard to make when you're looking at potential and possibility and saying, but what if, right? But I just think those are the kind of ethical decisions Christian convictions cause us to have to make, is to say, like, that's why we can look at a woman who's considering an abortion and say, look, we love you and I understand your situation. I understand why you'd think that's an answer, but it's not an answer. We can't be okay with that. And Christians have such moral conviction on abortion and have historically stood so well in that and compassionately, right? Like in ways that say, like, you're not a bad person because you're thinking about that, but that decision is bad. So like, let us help you, but let's draw a boundary around that and say, that's not the answer. In the same way, I think with reproductive technology, we need that kind of courage to say, it's not that you're a bad person if you're considering all your options, but are there places where we would draw boundaries and say, this thing here needs to be off limits because of the implications of what it creates? Here's the statistics if you want just something to sort of ponder. There's one fertility clinic in California that has 15,000 frozen embryos sitting in liquid nitrogen tanks at one facility. And that's a fraction of what's present. If you multiply that by all the fertility clinics that are in the US and the UK, there are millions of little lives that we have created technologically that are frozen right now. And so Christians need to see that not just as an individual question of, should I pursue this for my purposes as a family, but the broader question of what societally are we making possible and what are we on the hook for before the Lord in terms of our moral witness, our prophetic witness to the world in life.
So that's interesting, because now you just took it from it being me, about me and my wife, or just me, and you made it a kingdom thing.
One in eight couples has trouble conceiving or sustaining a pregnancy, so this is not unusual. The fertility industry in America is a $3.5 billion industry. So what that says is there's a real problem here that people want to address, and it's not wrong to say, what resources are available to me to address this? But there's also a capitalistic motive in play here, right? So fertility business is big business, and we need to see the sort of financial ties and implications, because this is the nature of capitalism, right? This is the nature of economics, is no one stepping back and asking the ethical questions of, like, well, should we make money off this or shouldn't we? The reason you have drug dealers in your city is because they make good money selling drugs, right? There's a market for it. And so it's when there's money to be made, no one's stepping back and slowing down and saying, should we really do this? I mean, we talked about gambling a few months ago on the podcast, right? Yeah, same thing, like, there. It's just like, well, there's money to be made, so let's go do it. So yes, Dusty, I think Christians need to care not just about the personal implications of a decision, but the broader societal implications. And what am I making possible? What culturally am I empowering through the decisions that I make? Yeah.
Pastors, tell me if I'm wrong here. It sounds like that. It reminds me of the story when Paul goes to Ephesus and he starts calling out the idol maker and pisses everybody off because it ruins his business. Is this technology-driven reproductive help, is that another form of idolatry where we're worshiping children or our own desires to have children? Because I'm thinking about all those millions of babies in freezers, and they're just there.
Can I add maybe a little bit of angle to this too?
Yeah.
Because culturally, I mean, just even though like the attitude about kids culturally,
yeah,
could this in some way be a church idol in some ways where the church values family,
yeah,
in ways that should be rightfully so different than the culture? And so is this in some ways a particular Christian idol?
Yeah.
I'm kind of making a broad statement there.
Yeah, because not everybody who has children sitting in a freezer are Christians necessarily.
Right.
But Christians do it.
Because we value family.
Right.
In a different
way, the language of idolatry is so tense there, because I'm like, yeah, wow, man, it's like, that's, you got to walk so gently. But I think you guys are onto something. Like, I think it's interesting. I'm doing some teaching, and I was studying the Canaanite fertility goddesses, right? Asherah. You see, the Old Testament talks about Asherah poles. So it's basically a big phallic symbol that they built, and they worshiped that god because it was believed that god would give children and give fertility. And so I don't know that we're all that beyond that same kind of thing. I mean, you know, this is so deeply a part of our humanity, right? It's so deeply wired into how God's made us. So the language of idolatry makes me tense, because I'm just like, I don't think any person out there listening to this who wants to have kids is like, I'm an idolater. But I do think the ways we can get captivated by that,
by what
can
we
be
want.
Can, yeah, be really, yeah, can be really subtle.
Because I feel like in the question of, man, can we have children? We can't have children. I want one so bad. We're not asking the question, maybe God doesn't want me to have a child right now. And if we believe in a sovereign God who allows things to happen and not happen, I think we need to wrestle with that question rather than, well, what can I do to have this baby that I can't naturally get?
Well, and the counter to that would be, well, God has given us medicine. So there are, like,
yeah,
I think a thoughtful person could say, well, but it's not ungodly to pursue various medical advances, right? And so that's what we're trying to say in this podcast, right, is yes and no. Like, right, yes, it's not ungodly to pursue what the common grace God has given through medicine. However, there are places where we have to draw some lines. Mm-hmm. And if we're not willing to say, here's the place where I'm willing to draw that line, and I don't mean we, like all of us individually. I think the church, what's interesting is the Catholic Church has spoken decisively, yeah, on in vitro fertilization. 2008, the Pope said, this is off limits for Catholics.
Right.
Protestants just don't do that. You know, it goes back to, we talked about that last week. It was just like, there's something in us that says, well, that seems kind of decisive.
And this is where Protestants get real wishy-washy.
Yeah.
And I think we got to make these decisions before you're in the throes of the process.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you're just going to get caught up in what you want when you want it. And so it's interesting to even think about the idolatry language in the terms of, a lot of the idolatry that we see in the Bible is timing, right? Mm-hmm. Like you see God saying, hey, here's where we're going. And the people are like, why aren't we there yet? Or why can't we go back? Mm-hmm. In the sense of, like, they don't understand God's timing. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we've seen couples struggle with infertility for a year. We've seen couples struggle with infertility indefinitely so far.
Yeah.
But our church is only 12 years old.
Right.
So it's just interesting to think about timing in light of infertility.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to asking some hard questions too. I mean, we do have these common grace methods, and like you said, Bob, drawing that line, but that does require asking some hard questions. And so I think in one way,
it requires moral courage. That's going to, yeah, you're going to say no to something and somebody's going to be upset about it.
Yeah. And so it just kind of goes back to the point I made before that, in order to, you got to go there. And if you end up going there and at the end of the day, you find that line and recognize that it could cost you, like, the only way that you're going to hold that line faithfully is if at that point where you recognize it's going to cost you, It's, but I'm going to trust the Lord. And my fear is that we don't wrestle that much. We don't go that far because it's going to cost and it's going to be painful and it's going to hurt. And so if anything, you know, maybe these two past two podcasts is just go there to push you to go there and to get you to consider these things.
A listener recently asked us to talk about functional saviors. And maybe that's a way to get after the question of idolatry, which feels tense to me, is to say, if hell is childlessness, then my functional savior is whatever will deliver me from that. And in the scriptures, that's always God, right? It's always crying out to the Lord and then seeking common grace. Like there's, you know, the story in the scriptures where Rachel buys mandrakes from Leah, that's an old fertility treatment. So it's like this goes back to the book of Genesis.
It's interesting to think about the idolatry piece and to even maybe lessen it a little bit, because I want to be a little bit careful with that language and to say, do I have some disordered desires, to use James K. Smith's language, right? I think his language is helpful here. Now, is it a slippery slope from desires and disordered desires to idolatry? Definitely, yep. Probably. But I think maybe a helpful question would be, if I had children, would my life be fulfilled? Would I have arrived? So it's just interesting to go down these rabbit holes a little bit and to say, you're so fixated on these particular things, which is right now you need a baby, and you've always planned on that. But pause for a minute and ask, what does God want for me right now in this season of life since I don't have one?
Going back to where we started with the question of technology and reproductive technology, as the parent of an adopted child, I would just want to say, can we as Christians embrace adoption as a very beautiful, God-given, common grace means of achieving parenthood that does not require technological manipulation? Again, I don't think that's the only answer. I'm not suggesting it's the only answer, but I do think when I think about millions of embryos being frozen, and I'm thinking, I don't want Christians contributing to that problem.
Yeah, and answering to the Lord for it.
How can we solve a problem instead? Well, the beauty of adoption is I'm both gaining a child and I'm solving someone else's lack of a parent, their orphan status in the world. And I think that's a very beautiful, that's why, you know, as a church and as a Christian community, I just want us to be very, very pro-adoption and very, very cautious and careful about reproductive technology, because I think that the trade-off is the more money and time I spend on reproductive technology and more aggressive and invasive forms of that, the more I'm sort of stepping away from or avoiding the questions of adoption. And sometimes I just think, well, maybe adoption should be our first question. It's just like, well, is that, I mean, you know, speaking from our own experience, that's, we just felt like this is what the Lord's inviting us into. It's the natural next step is to pursue adoption as a means of growing our family and as a means of helping bring justice in the world. All right. So we've stirred up a whole category here. And again, the reason that we want to open this conversation within the Christian community is just to say, these things matter. There are ethical, moral, and biblical concerns here. And if we close our eyes to them or close our ears to them, we're not living as faithful and thoughtful Christians. So as challenging it is, especially for people who find themselves in the throes of these pressing questions existentially right now, I know this is probably a hard podcast to listen to because we're tapping into things that you don't necessarily want to think about or questions you might not feel like asking. But for the broader church community as a whole, the church needs to be a place where we can talk about these things and where we're compelled to talk about these things, because this is the world that we live in, and the church has to have a witness in this world. and has to live with integrity in this world. And so, again, as we said on last week's podcast, we realize we're starting a conversation here. We're not endeavoring to finish it. And so as you have questions, thoughts, feedback, we'd love for you to reach out and let us know where you'd like to see us take the conversation. And again, we're trying to walk a line here of being faithful pastors, but also being faithful Christian theologians. And so as pastors, we have to care gently for the people God's entrusted to us. But as Christian theologians, we also have to care about the truth God has given and about questions of ethics. And so we're trying to gently do both those things, which is honestly pretty challenging. I think we all feel that around the table.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode, and we invite you to join the conversation. Like Bob said, shoot us a tweet at Cormdale Omaha or an email, podcast@cdomaha.com, and we'll talk to you again next week for another Wednesday conversation.